section86.com. We're changing the world of podcasting one show at a time.
Multiple contracts are not renewed. What's going on with AJ Styles? And Dan O'Brien deals with Corporation 2.0. All this and much, much more this week's Off the Mark.
TNA Impact referee Brian Hebner, and you're listening to Off the Mark.
86 Productions.
Episode of Off the Mark. We are the podcast that provides most in-depth insight and analysis into the world of professional wrestling. I am Andrew. He is Aaron. Let's get right into the news. SoCal Val is gone from TNA. And is this going to be a big deal, Aaron?
I don't think anyone cares, Andy. I, to be honest with you, had no idea who she was until I saw her at a house show a few years back. And even then, I thought to myself, how are you involved in the wrestling world? Because I'm not saying that she's ugly, but she, you know, when you compare her to the Knockouts, what was she offering, you know? And so it's one of those things where it's like,
Well, at one point she was a manager actually, from Southern California. Ironically, that's how the name SoCal Val, I'm guessing that's how she got it, but she was doing stuff before she was even 16. I've read certain things about her, and the real thing is, like, no one really knew what she brought to TNA that they couldn't bring someone who's also up and coming could do as well. So her not getting renewed, not a big deal to me. Don't care. The one thing that I thought was really interesting, you know, moving to the WWE, is that Ted DiBiase Jr. did not renew his contract. Mm-hmm. Now this, you know, he's a friend of yours. He's, you know, he's endorsed you a couple times on LinkedIn. I'm just wondering, you know, what are your thoughts on this?
Yeah, so Ted and I, of course, he's my boy. You know, him and I are very close. It is interesting. He had said that he wanted to be a family man, which, you know, I can totally understand and get behind. And, you know, the wrestling schedule can be really hectic. And, you know firsthand raising a child that, you know, you want to be there for every moment of its life. And so it's one of those things that I totally understand. You know, that isn't, he didn't close the door. You know, he didn't quit. They didn't, you know, fire him. He just chose not to renew his contract. And I'm sure he'll do some small indie things. You know, he could go to TNA, you know, and work some small amount of dates there, but he just could not do WWE's 200, you know, 300 day schedule. So, it'll be kind of cool to see him back. Whenever he does come back, he'll be refreshed and I think more ready to go.
Yeah, and they did numerous things trying to get him over. They brought Virgil back at one point, and it just, for some reason, it didn't work. But the one thing I never understood is that he was on the road for quite a while recently, and they just didn't use him. So he was getting dressed, he was getting prepared to wrestle that night, and he didn't get used. It's one of those things. It's like, hey, I didn't realize JTG still had a job with the WWE. Same thing with Ted DiBiase. It was one of those things. You're like, he's still employed. Why aren't they using him?
Yeah, and with Ted, I actually don't think that he couldn't connect with the crowd enough, because I think that he could connect a little bit. Yep. But I really feel that they just, you know, he is definitely a lower mid card type of guy. Could probably be mid card, maybe even get into upper mid card. But that's about it. That's where his ceiling is.
Yep, DiBiase posse.
Yeah, but they needed to put him in some good storylines, because that's the thing. You can really help get a person over by putting them in very interesting storylines, like we're going to talk about in just a little bit. But if you don't do that, people aren't going to care, because I could not tell you what his storyline was. The only thing I can think of, he was with Maurice for a while with $1 million belt, and then he had Virgil. And that's the only thing I can remember. I don't remember any of his feuds. I don't remember other than Cody, like, when he was. Yeah, but he, you know, that was it. Yeah. So, but let's move on, though, to AJ Styles, Andy. Apparently, he is in very tough contract negotiations with TNA.
Yeah, what's going on here is that he wants more money, and I think he deserves it. He's been with the company since day one. 11 years he's been with the company. You would think that he would get some type of, you know, he's already making – he's making the most money of any non-WWE wrestler that they've had, which is an interesting thing. So basically, WWE wrestlers that were popular in WWE, they get paid more. Well, he's been with TNA the entire time, and he's making the most out of any contracted wrestler. He wants more money. That's what the bottom line is. Is TNA going to give it to him? You know, his contract runs out, you know, sometime in the next 2 weeks. Or it might have already ran out. It might have ran out actually today. So I don't know what's going to happen here. For some reason, like, I think that if his contract is up and that's it, that's fine. He's out of the Bound for Glory series. It's over with. But the funny thing I've been trying to figure out is WWE would probably want him, but they would make him go to developmental first, which I think is a big mistake. Because right now, Sami Zayn or El Generico is down there, and he's putting out these matches that are terrific. And then you're like, oh, why is he in NXT?
The contract negotiations. Yeah. The point that you were bringing up is, you know, wanting more money, and I also think that, you know, he cut a little bit of a shoot promo, which we'll talk about in more depth in a little bit, but he brought up some very interesting points that, you know, I think that money has something to do with it, but I also feel that he's not getting maybe the respect he wants. And I think that might be the biggest thing because, you know, when I think TNA, I think AJ Styles. And I've always thought that before I was, you know, before I started watching TNA, I knew about this guy named AJ Styles who put on these amazing matches. And AJ, you know, he is one of my favorite wrestlers by far. You know, maybe top five of all time, even, I would say. He is the phenomenal one. He really is. And he is, you know, still in the highlight of his career. You know, I don't think that it's, you know, gone downhill yet. So I think that if it is a money thing, he deserves probably whatever he is asking. And so I would give it to him. You know, I would have him be the face of any company. He could be the face of WWE, you know, right now if he really wanted to, in my opinion. But that's just mine. So, hey, but Andy, WWE programming for this week. Let's start it off with, you know, pretty interesting thing we had here. We had Cody Rhodes, The Miz, Fandango, and Damian Sandow had a little bit of a tag team thing going. But for me, this seemed more like it was an IC type of a feud, rather than a World Heavyweight Championship type. I gotta ask you, what were your feelings about it?
I actually agree. It seemed like more like Intercontinental Champion material, or even United States Champion material. It doesn't seem like it's a World Heavyweight Champion type of feud right now. But, you know, it's one of those things like, you know, like Rhodes, I could see him actually having a bigger title. Same thing with The Miz. Fandango, no. But Sandow's the weird one. I still am surprised they gave him the Money in the Bank. But it's also, if he had the strap on, you're like, well, you know, it's one of those things where I think they've dumbed down, I think, one of the most prestigious belts out there with the World Heavyweight Championship belt. And they focus everything on the WWE title opposed to what it should be and what they could have done to make that title even worth more. If that makes sense.
Well, okay, let me ask you this much then. Out of those four people, let's say today they decide to give the World Heavyweight Championship to one of them, which one could they give it to that you would be like, okay, I could see him, you know, winning that?
I would have to say Cody Rhodes. The Miz has had it, but realistically, Cody Rhodes, I think, is on his way back up. And I think that he could potentially be a main eventer out of everything that's happened with a bunch of top stars going down.
I disagree with you. I'm not saying that Cody Rhodes isn't main event material, because I think that he can be. He has the potential to be. And I think his current feud with Damian Sandow is a really good indication of that. But I think that Damian Sandow, if they stop his stupid losing streak, I think Damian Sandow is actually the most for me. You give him the strap, I would say, yeah, he deserves that. He looks like somebody who would be a main eventer. He looks like somebody that deserves that type of a title. But the problem is they're having him lose all of these matches. I would go so far to say that Sin Cara might have won more matches in the past month than, you know, maybe in the past year than Damian Sandow has. Damian Sandow, unfortunately, I think that they're horribly mismanaging him. And I think that him and Rhodes' feud that they have going on right now is actually one of the best mid-card feuds that they have going on. Throwing in Miz and Fandango is really great too, because that way you have this mixture of people who, you know, if you had, for example, the IC title up for grabs, these four would be perfect for it. I mean, you could have fatal four ways, you could have the tag teams, you know, one-on-ones, triple threats, all that stuff. The problem is that apparently everybody needs to be a former world heavyweight champion, but that's topic for another time. But speaking of the IC champion, Andy, your boy is going to be taking him on and Paul Heyman at Night of Champions.
Really? Oh, CM Punk. I was like, wait, Kofi Kingston's doing something? Right. So anyway, yeah. So CM Punk is actually facing Curtis Axel and Paul Heyman at Night of Champions. Now, the stipulation I like here is that if he was to pin Curtis Axel, it's him versus Heyman. Here's my problem. This needs to be a steel cage match. That's what I'm thinking. Because then there's no escape for Paul Heyman. Or if they had a stipulation where if Curtis Axel does get pinned, they throw him out, steel cage. Then I think it'd be interesting. But I don't know what they're going to do with this. But I'm pretty sure CM Punk's going to win.
Well, yeah. Yeah, I would imagine so. Now, Andy, RVD takes on Alberto Del Rio in a non-title match. And the stipulation for this was if he beats Alberto Del Rio, then he gets a shot at the title at the pay-per-view. And we had talked about this in the past. Is this smart to give away a free pay-per-view match on free TV?
It is completely dumb for them to do this. For the first reason, RVD went against Dean Ambrose, and he lost to him at SummerSlam. The curtain jerker on YouTube or Yahoo, however you can watch it. Why would you put it there? That should have been the first match. But whatever. Then he goes for the World Heavyweight Championship. What's probably going to happen is that he's going to win. And then Del Rio is going to beat the crap out of him and Sandow's going to be the champion. That's what I picture is going to happen with this, because it's ridiculous. But the fact that they gave the match away for free, it's, you know, they could, if they would have cut it only for like a minute and then Del Rio grabs his title, says, "I'm not having any of this," and just walks away. I think that means more, because then you want to see it. You're like, wow, that was a great minute. What could they do with 15? You know, then you're like, I want to watch that match. Opposed to they wrestle and they're like, well, I kind of saw it. But yeah, so that's my feeling on it.
You know what? Let me ask you this. This kind of brings up an interesting question. With John Cena being out now, we had talked about last week how the main event is super thin now. It really is, because you don't have John Cena there anymore. And, you know, we named off really like four people who are main eventers. And so realistically, when you think about it, the main eventers, you have four people and you have two titles between those four people. With John Cena being gone, do you think that there's any chance that they'll combine the WWE and World Heavyweight Championship?
If they were to do that, they need to get rid of that ridiculous WWE belt and just have it the World Heavyweight Championship belt. Because everyone knows that title. You have your logo on there already. No more ego. Just make it that great title. That title, every time I see it, I just think, wow. I look back to WCW days, even the NWA days, and you're just like, wow. That belt has been around through all that. You know. And then all of a sudden, they're like, hey, let's make a WWE title. Let's make that more pristine. You can call it the WWE title, or, you know, if you want to. But it's a world, you know, the world heavyweight champion, which to me is perfect. But
the only thing is, you got to realize that it is, because it is WWE. Now, if I was running a promotion and I was choosing my favorite titles, my big title would be the world WWE's World Heavyweight Championship, because I love the big gold belt. I think that is the ultimate. You know, it's iconic looking, and it doesn't need to be updated. It's very nice. And then a secondary title, I would probably have like the IC title, you know, something along those lines, because I like that one. But I actually think that maybe this could be John Cena being out might be good for multiple reasons, because, you know, when you think about it, the World Heavyweight Championship has kind of become the what used to be WCW's U.S. title, because the U.S. title for WCW, unlike the IC title for WWE, was only held by the best of the best. And that was the title that Bret Hart was holding, DDP, Booker T, Lex Luger, Sting, Ric Flair. This was only held by good wrestlers, and not when they are up and coming, but when they're at the top, they were still holding this title. Whereas with the IC title, it was held by Ultimate Warrior, but then it was held by people who were much lower. You know, most recently, like, you take a look at like Santino. Santino was holding the IC title, and nothing against him, but, you know, the vast majority of people that were that have held that title were Hall of Famers. So anyway, that's getting completely off topic. So, Andy, let's move on, though, to Daniel Bryan. You know, he's been the main focus for Raw the past 2 weeks. This past week, he's trying to get even with the corporation. He does some hijinks to them. They do some stuff back. What about it did you really like?
Well, they just made Daniel Bryan a main eventer for life. That's what I truly believe. Just after this show, he is now a main eventer for life. I got to give him credit on this because they wrote this properly. I like the yes thing on the old Escalade. I love that, and it's probably paint that just washes off. But it says yes all over that Escalade, which I thought was hilarious. The fact that they had him get beat up, the only thing that like really bothered me, be that entire thing where they said that if any of you WWE superstars come out and help Daniel Bryan, you're fired. I kept thinking, I'm like, doesn't Big Show have an ironclad contract where he can do whatever he wants to anyone and they can't do anything about it? And I was like, oh, Dan, oh, I see it right now. This was, and I said what was going to happen. I was like, all right, Big Show's going to put his hand out before Orton comes out and says no, and then just decks him right there. And then he can grab. If you know, Tripp says you're fired. He's like, don't you remember I have an ironclad contract? You can't fire me.
Mm-hmm.
That would be funny to me, but to me, it made Big Show again a main eventer. I think it also made Ziggler a main eventer because of what happened, and arguably Miz could have been at least an upper mid carder because they're focusing on those guys. And you're like, okay, so I see what they're doing. It would be kind of cool if those guys all got together as a main event group, kind of like the Main Event Mafia to a certain extent, and then went against the corporation. So then you have the regular wrestling going on, and then you have the big time feud.
So let me ask you this, though. So Daniel Bryan, you know, he got it even a little bit, but then, you know, he ends the show the same way that he ended the show last week. You know, he was on the ground. He was hurting. You know, what do you think about that?
That's one of those things. I'm not sure how I feel about it. You know, it's been 2 weeks now that they've done this. Yeah, you can beat a guy down and then you build him up. I mean, that's been their philosophy. But I think this to me is just, it almost seems like bullying, like what Ryback has been doing lately, like where you bully someone. That's what I take out of this. And it gets me mad and I don't want to watch wrestling because I know what's going to happen at the very end. So when does he get revenge? Because he gets revenge, and then if he goes up one step, he gets knocked down two steps. And it just keeps doing that over and over again. So I hope that they do something great with this. I can see great potential. This reminds me of a Stone Cold type of situation. I'm just wondering if they're going to take it to that next level, because if they do, Daniel Bryan will be a major, major WWE superstar. I'd say in par with Cena then. But I don't know. Guess we'll have to wait and see.
I wouldn't say on par with Cena. Cena's in his own category. You know, look, you go back to the 80s, there was Hulk Hogan, and that was tier one. And then you had tier two, which was everybody else. You know, I mean, that's where you had Macho Man. That's where you had, you know, Warrior and all those guys. And you go a little bit further, and, you know, it's always that way. You always have that one guy who is the guy. So I wouldn't say Daniel Bryan would be up there yet. However, though, I think that Daniel Bryan would be in that Randy Savage category. You know, he's going to be the person who's up there who people, wrestling fans, will remember. Some other people might, you know who he is too. So, but I actually do like kind of what they've been doing. I know that you can't expect things to always get better after 2 weeks. They're definitely going to, you're going to see this guy, you know, get beaten down, and you're going to see him really take a lot of punishment. And then little by little, he's going to go after, and he's going to take the rest of them out. He's going to start by taking out members of the Shield. You know, he's going to probably end up having a match with Vince McMahon even at one point in time. And then I think that he may have a match with Triple H and, of course, Randy Orton, which is going to happen at Night of Champions. So there's going to be retribution for what has happened. And he's going to run the gauntlet, so to speak, and he's going to take them out. And so I think that it's actually going to be really good for him long term. And I think that this is how you build a character up, because unfortunately, unlike with Alberto Del Rio, Daniel Bryan has been he didn't start off at the top. He started off and built his way up. And we've been doing this show now for 3 years, and he's been somebody that we've talked about. You know, we watched him actually blossom into a really great WWE wrestler. And I think that's something on the reverse with an Alberto Del Rio, who he started also when we started the show, and they just had him at the top. They're like, oh, you know, he's a main eventer. Well, why? Just because we said so. Well, that doesn't make any sense. Wait, why is he winning the Royal Rumble? Why is he winning, why is he winning the Money in the Bank? Why is he a two-time WWE champion? Why is he a two-time World Heavyweight champion? And he's not really accomplished anything. That's kind of weird, you know? But I could go on and on, so I will end my rant there.
Let's thank our sponsor, HostGator. Are you a blogger, or podcaster, or are you just not happy with your web host? You need to check out HostGator.com. You're going to find web hosting made easy and affordable. HostGator offers unlimited disk space, unlimited bandwidth, and one-click script installs with a free site builder and hands down the best control panel out there. Stop by today and try a free demo to see how easy it is. And make sure you use special coupon code OFFTHEMARK and you're going to save 25% off your web hosting packages. So what do you got to lose? Check out HostGator.com and take a bite at web hosting costs. Also, check out Section 86 Off The Mark page. You're going to see a banner for WWEShop.com. Just use whatever coupon code they have up there. Click on that banner and you're going to save some money on some merchandise with WWEShop.com. So let's move on to Impact Wrestling this week. So there's a... What's going on with Ace and Nate's, dude? It seems like they're, confused, or Bully just makes up his rules as he wants?
There's some dissension within Ace's and Nate's, and we saw it in the first part of the show. We saw that Ken Anderson was like, whoa, Tito Ortiz does not get a cut. And it was rather interesting because Bully, you know, he pulled rank, and he's like, no, he's going to cut. And then we see a little bit later that, Ken's like, look, you know, we have to have a vote for this stuff. Garrett's totally behind that. So's Wes and Nux, too, which realistically, that's all of Ace's Nate's now. So I got to ask you, do you think that there's going to be two factions, that there's going to be Ken Anderson's and Bully Ray's faction?
There might be, or I think Ken Anderson is on his way out. That's what I believe. I thought him joining Aces and Eights would hurt his career, and I think it has. Him being with them, because I feel that he's instead of going from a main eventer, he went to a mid-carder by doing that. That's what I truthfully believe. And all those guys are curtain jerkers, nothing against them, but they are considered curtain jerkers, and he's a mid-carder, opposed to him being with a bunch of mid-carders and him being the main eventer.
And I actually agree with you, because look, let's face it, Briscoe and Bischoff are jobbers. Those are people who start off a show, or they do the YouTube, they do the dark match. They are not people that you pay to see at all. They're the people that get beaten up.
They're the Vincent for in the NWO, where he would just go out and get his butt kicked. That's what they pretty much are. But I will say, I thought it was funny, is Anderson said one thing that I was laughing my butt off on. He goes, when did we vote not to vote? Which I thought was hilarious. I could stop laughing. I'm like, I had to rewind it. I'm like, oh, this is hilarious. Yeah.
So but I definitely agree with you, though, about him being, you know, he was a main eventer. Now he's with all these under, you know, lower mid-card people. And so it is a little weird. But I think that him joining was probably bad at first. If he gets kicked out, or, you know, there's something that's going to happen there to have that tension, I actually think that it could help raise him a little bit more. You know, he's going to be that one person on the outside of Aces and Eights, but he's, you know, going to join the main event mafia or do something like that, right? And I think then it actually will be good. So, but speaking of main event mafia, Andy, it turns out that AJ Styles, he did not join. He just helped them get rid of the Aces and Eights. And then he gave him, you know, gave a shoot promo. What did you think of that?
I thought it was interesting that they allowed him to basically say whatever he wants. And he actually called out Dixie, which I thought was pretty interesting. Basically saying that, hey, I deserve more money. I don't care if you guys are doing cuts and here and there. I don't care anymore. I want more money. I deserve it. I've been here for 11 years. Pay me. I agree with AJ. I think him being there for that long, he deserves something for it. He has not jumped shipped, even though I don't think he could, but he hasn't. And that's pretty much how I feel about it. I think that he deserves it. If he decides to go elsewhere, he'd go to Ring of Honor, which actually I don't think he'd fit in anymore because of his age. And I don't think he's just going to fit with Ring of Honor. He'd be stuck going to the Indies or going to Japan, which he can make a lot more money in Japan and work half the time. He could work like 100 dates a year and make a ton of money in Japan. So I don't know. That's the thing. Like with this work, with this shoot, you know, some of it's a work, but most of it's a shoot. You know, I guess we're going to see in a few weeks. I think that if they go to St. Louis and he's not there, I mean, if he shows up and he loses for some reason, or he's not in the Final Four of the Bound for Glory series, I think that'll determine if he stays or not. Because if he's not, then he just won't be back. And they're not.
And I agree with that. I think that if he is not a part of the Bound for Glory series, the Final Four, I agree that he is probably not going to be there much longer. But to actually talk about something that you brought up before, which is, you know, WWE, I don't think that they could put him in developmental. I'm going to just throw that out there. I think that if he went to WWE, when you have a guy who, look, you can call TNA indie if you want, you know, they're a national promotion, but you have a guy who is a main eventer for a national promotion, you cannot have them go to developmental. I know that obviously for somebody like a Jeff Hardy or Kurt Angle, they won because, you know, they've been in WWE. And, you know, AJ Styles, I think maybe wrestled one match with WWE way, way back when. But I don't think that they could afford to put him in to developmental based on the amount of money he would be making, too, because he would not go to WWE for pennies on the dollar. He would go there to make a lot more money. So I think it would be a bad idea if they did. But anyway, let's move on, though, to the Bound for Glory gauntlet match that is set for next week. And it's a gauntlet match, as I mentioned. And it's for 20 points. So whomever wins that is going to be in the Final Four. So the Final Four is pretty much set. But this next winner, the person who wins this gauntlet match, will actually be the last of the Final Four. What do you think?
I think it's pretty interesting. It's open just about to, I think, anyone except Bradley, right? Everyone is potentially can actually get it, except Bradley, because he has 7 points. But it, was it Parks and someone else has 17 points? So I think it's Parks and Hernandez have 17 points. So potentially that would put him in the Final Four. So everyone except Jay Bradley's mathematically eliminated, which I think is pretty interesting. But yeah, so it's happening in St. Louis then in 2 weeks. Is that right?
Well, no. The gauntlet match is, if I'm correct, is next week from what we saw yesterday. But the whole point of it was because the Final Four set, it's Jeff Hardy, Austin Aries, Bobby Roode, and Magnus. Those are the Final Four for the Bound for Glory series. But because of this last little match, this 20 points that's going to be added in there, they get one last chance to secure their spot. So even though you mentioned that Bradley is all but eliminated, from the way that they made it sound, that he's still going to be in that match. But then again, to close Impact, Hogan said that Bully Ray is going to have to defend his title against Sting. And as we all know, Sting, according to kayfabe, he cannot wrestle again for the TNA Championship. So, you know, who knows if all of a sudden they changed their mind, or they were like, well, Hogan said and, but he meant but, you know. So we'll see. I think that this is the point where AJ Styles will be the winner. And if he is not, then that's when we'll know if he's gone from TNA. Because, you know, look, Jeff Hardy, A-double, Bobby Roode, and Magnus, four really great competitors. Four people who, it's going to be really cool to see which one of those people wins. But having AJ in there is kind of necessary too.
So my problem with this whole thing is the fact that all the guys have wrestled, I think, six times. And it's supposed to be a round robin series where everyone wrestles everyone. So it should be 11 matches. And then the highest point total is the one who wins. And they mess this all up. Do you think that TNA is just like, I've changed my mind on TNA. I think it can survive. I really, really do. But do you feel that if Hogan and Bischoff are still involved with it, do you feel that that will actually fail TNA?
No, not necessarily. I think that if they have that filter to push ideas through, then they can survive. However, though, I think that and there were some things I found out about, you know, kind of how things are go with like Hogan and TNA and whatnot, which has changed my opinion a little bit on them. But I think TNA is still in a good spot. I love the Bound for Glory series, but I definitely agree with you. You cannot say that it's a round robin and then not everybody faces everybody once, because people are going to see through that. The other option too is, look, 12 people might be a little too much. You know, why not do something where it starts off as 12 and then they get rid of four people after a month? You know, they say, I don't know, whoever the four bottom people are, you're gone, you know, after a month. And then that way the focus is only on those eight people. And then those eight people can actually have a round robin where it's, you know, 56 matches. Because let's be honest here. What is it? It's 12 times 11, right? So do you have any idea how many matches that is? That is way too much.
It's not 144. It's 132.
Yeah. So 132 matches. Really? Mm-hmm. That's how many matches we're going to have? That's a lot. That's an awful lot of matches. And you're supposed to do that over like what type of a time period? You know, over like 2-3 months, you're supposed to do that many matches. Yeah, you can't. You physically can't do that. You can't. So that's why if you do 56 matches, though, and you do three matches a night over 3 months, you know, 3 times 4, that's 12 times another 3. So, yeah, that's going to be a little bit more doable than what they were originally doing. So I think that TNA is still, they're not beyond saving. They haven't, you know, crapped the bed yet. David Arquette is not their world heavyweight champion. Yeah. So all is well within the world of TNA. Mm-hmm. To an extent.
Yeah. So let's move on to our weekly topic. We're going to talk about Ryback versus Goldberg. Goldberg recently was asked if he's going to be at WrestleMania. Of course, he said no because he hasn't been asked. But then he did say that, oh, yeah, I am doing, I have talked to the WWE about doing some stuff. And then he shoots on Ryback, which I thought was really interesting recently. And he's going to
took a few pod shots at him. Yeah.
But he's going to be in the new WWE video game, so I will see Goldberg. And plus, with the DVD coming up, he's going to be shown at least twice, I would say. But Goldberg says that he has – I really love this quote. I was reading in the Observer. He said that he has more talent in his finger than Ryback has in his entire body, which I thought was hilarious. Because In a way, he might be a little right on that. What are your thoughts?
So, you know, I'm going to do a little bit of a comparison. And the way that Goldberg, you know, when he came out, he definitely wrestled some smaller guys at first. And he was, you know, he was a powerhouse, but he also was wrestling on like, you know, their version of it was wrestling on Saturday night. You know, I don't even remember Velocity? What the program was.
Velocity.
Well, I want to say Velocity, but he's wrestling on WCW Saturday night main event or whatever it was called. And then, you know, he was doing Monday Night Nitro. And they also, I think it was Worldwide was another one that they had. You know, he was doing all these other smaller things, and the crowd was starting to really get into him because he was a unique type of product at the time. And he had a little symbol, you know, on his arm, the tribal tattoo, and people were just really getting behind him. And then, you know, you hear the chants start, you know, the Goldberg, you know, and people start really getting behind Goldberg. And then he got put into some high profile matches. And I think that's where things got much better. When he had feuds with Steve Mongo McMichael and then he was having feuds with Raven and DDP and all these other bigger guys, and he was getting over. And then, of course, you had the streak going on too, and that became a huge selling point for him. And so he was getting really big. Now, on the reverse, Ryback was taking on jobbers. He was taking on local wrestlers who were literally half of his size, if not a third of his size. I mean, these people, I remember, and we talked about on the show, these people were just like, they were sticks. They weighed probably 150, 160 pounds, and he's like 330, you know, just muscle. That's all he is. It's not the same. But the buildup they were trying to do was very similar. So I can definitely see how people perceive Ryback as being a Goldberg knockoff. Do you feel the same way?
I think he is to a certain extent. I don't think they meant him to be a Goldberg knock, like basically a knockoff, but he kind of turned into it. You know, he did have a little bit of a streak for a little bit, but then it went away. But he was doing the same thing. He was just wrestling jobbers over and over again, and he wasn't. I think the WWE put him on TV too much. I think if they had him on TV 1 week, you rest him another week, then put him back on TV, and then you kind of slowly put him in where he would be on Superstars instead of Raw. He'd be on a main event opposed to Raw. Then he'd be on SmackDown opposed. You know, like he was still wrestling on TV every week, but it was against, you know, you could have them as a jobber at that time. But I felt that them throwing him on Raw every week, I thought was too much. And the fact that his matches were like, you know, the same length as Goldberg's, because Goldberg's, I swear they wouldn't work in the ring. They would just say, this is what we're going to do. And the match is over with. And Goldberg's like, all right, spear jackhammer, I'm done. You know,
yeah,
pretty much.
Well, and I think the other thing, too, is that we had a. So let's compare the catchphrases. Feed me more.
Who's next?
And who's next?
Mm-hmm. I think they're completely different. Who's next? Feed me more. Okay, well, you're going to give him more guys, but he's also lost a bunch, a couple big matches. And then Goldberg's like, just who's next? I feel that is more intimidating than feed me more. Because I think feed me more is like, all right, you want some more food? You know.
Well, you know, and I do want to say this. I think that Goldberg, he came at the right time, and he was very unique. And he, you know, people have said that he was a Stone Cold knockoff, and I really do not agree with that in any shape or form. Stone Cold was anti-establishment. He was an anti-hero who wanted to drink beer and, you know, kick some butt, plain and simple. He was telling his boss to F off and all that other great stuff. And then you had Goldberg, who would come out, and he was just this beast of a man, and he would come out. He would, you know, do a few power moves, spear, jackhammer, walk away. That's that. Didn't really cut promos. You know, he really didn't. He was not a promo guy. He was all he did was wrestle, and he wrestled well. So I think that Goldberg, just the thing about him is that he was unique for the time. And then Ryback came along, and immediately everybody made the comparison to Bill Goldberg. And by doing so, it immediately made Ryback not look good, because he was perceived as a watered down version of this unique product, and people see through that. They always do. People are going to take a look, and that's why still to this day people are chanting Goldberg to Ryback. You know, they're not doing that just to do it. They're doing that because it's very similar to a Goldberg type match. He's giving you the clothesline, and then he's doing the shell shock, which is a good move. You know, it's actually really cool. You know, it's just a Samoan drop, but the way that they do it, it makes it look good. They need him with a manager, and they need to get him out of that stupid singlet, and they need to give him a better character. And I don't like the bully character that they're currently doing with him, because I don't think that's going to have long-term effect, or that's not going to be a long-term character. That's a short-term solution to a long-term problem.
And yeah, I do agree with that aspect of it, but I think they're potentially leading for Goldberg to come in and have him set him straight, which I think would be pretty interesting if they were to do that. Also, about his wrestling attire, believe it or not, the same guy who does RVD's does do his. And RVD actually explained that, because Ryback, he said he either called, emailed, and texted him, but he wanted to make sure he was okay with RVD before he actually had the gear made. And RVD's like, yeah, because he wants the guy to, you know, grow his business. And the guy actually contacted RVD as well. And Robert Van Dam, of course, is like, no, do it. You know, get some money, because all your money's coming just from me. Why don't you make more money? Please do Ryback stuff. And he also explained that you know, like RVD's has Ying Yangs on it, and Ryback's has like, you know, like beasts on it or monsters, whatever you want to say. So I thought I just thought that's pretty interesting.
The last thing before we go, I have to ask you this. Was Goldberg any good?
At that time, he was. Looking back, you know, he really didn't. I mean, when he came to the WWE, I didn't care. I truthfully believe that Goldberg does not give a crap about the wrestling industry whatsoever. And I think his ego is way too high. Because
whoa, so like the Warrior, would you say?
I would say, and I would rather have the Ultimate Warrior in the Hall of Fame before Bill Goldberg.
Oh, wow.
That, and I and the thing is that if everyone knows who's listening to the show, I don't like the Ultimate Warrior. I can't stand him. We did an entire special about how stupid he is. But the thing is, he didn't care about the business, but he does sort of now because he, of course, can't wrestle. But Goldberg just doesn't care. But the weird part is the guy's been working out and training basically to make a comeback, but he's been waiting for them to call him. So he's still in shape. They actually asked him what it would take for him to get back in the ring. He's like, I'm always in shape for the ring. He's like, I never have to do it. And I started thinking, I was like, wait a minute. So you've been training for ever since you left the WWE, thinking they're going to call back and give you a Brock Lesnar contract when you're not worth it. That's what I think.
Whoa.
Yeah.
Hold the phone.
So that's why.
You hold the phone. You are an exec at WWE, and you have the opportunity to bring in Bill Goldberg for a Brock Lesnar type contract, not saying exactly like his, but a type of contract, maybe even a Chris Jericho like contract. You would not bring him in?
Well, because he would want certain things. If he said I will put Ryback over. If he goes in there and says that because he wants to build that guy up, you know, if he goes on and let's say I want to win at the pay-per-view, but I will lose the following night at Raw because so I can put him over. I think then it would mean something, but he's not going to want to put anyone over. I mean, but I will say when he came back the first time to WWE and they had the Elimination Chamber match, Triple H beat him fair and square.
Yeah, I would say that's more Triple H ego. Let's say this. You have Bill Goldberg for 70 dates for 1 year. You have him for 70 dates, which means that you could put the strap on him potentially. You could also put him in a lot of high profile feuds, you know, but you're going to pay him good money. You're going to pay him Brock Lesnar money. Would you do that?
I don't know. I think I'd have to do a 3-month trial because here's why. Because if you give him Brock Lesnar, I think is making $2 million a year. I'm just going to say I'm almost 100% positive that's what he makes is $2 million. If I'm going to pay someone $2 million to work, you know, like what, like 70 dates a year? I mean, and you can only work so many pay-per-views. Like, if you only work 3 of those pay-per-views, you're going to have to figure out how do I make him relevant still and how I can have him skip wrestling at this pay-per-view. To me, that's a lot of work.
70 dates, he's going to be working every pay-per-view.
But the thing is, though, Brock Lesnar only has to work 3 pay-per-views a year.
Yeah, I know, but that's Brock Lesnar. I'm saying that, you know, Goldberg gave
him for 70 dates. If that didn't matter, if you said 70 dates and they all could be pay-per-view, then it's different. Then I think it could be potential because there's certain feuds they could have with it where he could actually help go against the corporation. And what would be funny is if he goes against the corporation and then at the last moment screws the WWE people and goes to the corporation, that would be awesome. And I think
the point. So now it sounds like you're on board with it.
But the thing is, it's WWE. It depends. Sometimes they do it stupid and you're like, this makes no sense. And sometimes you're like, that is genius. Triple H turning on Daniel Bryan, giving the 1-2-3 to Randy Orton. Well,
I'm talking about Goldberg. So here's the thing. You and I are definitely, you know, we got to end the show, but you and I are in huge disagreement because I think Goldberg, he cared about the business a lot more than Warrior did. I think Warrior was 100% about the money and about the fame. And Goldberg, he actually
believe that you, Goldberg was the worst. What he was about. He was about money first, Goldberg. And then screw wrestling. He didn't want to have anything to do with wrestling for the longest time. The only reason he came to the WWE is because he got a big fat contract. And that's it. And I know in that contract, I bet you anything, it said that I am going to have a higher winning percentage than anything, and I'm going to get at least one title shot. And guess what? That's what happened.
Absolutely. He is a former world heavyweight champion.
But he got booed. When he wrestled Brock Lesnar, he got booed. No one cared. They're both leaving.
No. No, people booed because they didn't want to see those two wrestle because they knew that both of them were leaving. So that's the only reason why people booed. If both of them were going to be around for a lot longer, that would have been an epic match. It really would have been. The problem is both of those people were leaving, and so people were mad about that. People were
They weren't. So, they didn't care. That's the thing. They were mad that they were leaving. They're like, screw you guys. We don't like you anyways. We want Stone Cold to stun both of you.
Well, I'll give you the last word there because we got to end it.
That's all the time we have for this week's show. If you're into the Twitter, you can follow the show at AuthorMark86. I want to thank 86 Productions for hosting and ending the podcast. And I want to thank all of our listeners for taking time to download and listen to the show. And for Aaron Hughes, I am Andrew Hughes. And until next time, we'll see you in the ring.